3, 2, 1. Hello, Michelle.
How's it going? I'm getting ready to crack my neck.
Oh, go ahead. Like crack your neck.
I feel like I'm
put it on. Put the microphone to it so we can hear it. Does it pop?
I think I just popped.
Ooh, that was a good one. That was a good one. Do you do that all the time?
Just when I'm getting ready to
throw fight. Down?
Yeah.
Pull this microphone like a fist from your face. There we go.
Is that better?
Yeah, perfect.
All right.
So what's happening?
No, we're just in town. My brother-in-law just got stationed here in California, so we drove him down, and then we did the whole Disney
thing. San Diego?
No, I think it's actually an hour south of here, I think. So it's not close by, but
mm-hmm. Cool.
Air Force. Oh,
okay.
And so we did the whole Disney
thing. Is that Edwards?
Thing. Yes.
Oh, okay.
I think it is.
Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. I know where that is. Yeah.
Yeah. So we got stationed there.
That was the first time I ever saw a stealth bomber. It was like right after 911, we were filming Fear Factor out there, mm-hmm. and I saw one fly overhead. It's like a UFO. It's like, wow, that is crazy.
Does it look like a UFO?
Yeah, it doesn't even look real.
Really?
You ever seen one in real life?
Never.
Mm-hmm. It looks like a Batmobile, like Batman's plane.
Uh-huh.
It's so crazy. When you see one flying, you're like, wow, the engineering involved in something like that. It's insane.
And that was a while back.
Yeah.
Because it's Fear Factor.
Sure. It was 2001 because mm-hmm. it was right after 9/11. So it's 2000. That's it right there. That's what we
it's
saw.
One of them. There's two.
One of them?
There's a B-2 and then this is like a F-116 or something like that.
I don't know which one we saw, but it was black and wicked looking.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's crazy. It looks like your Tesla.
Yeah. flying around in one of those things. That's what we thought.
And, well, imagine back then. That's mm-hmm. what it looked like back then. So what is there now?
Right. You probably can't see them. They probably look like the sky.
Probably.
Are you from a military background?
My dad, yeah.
Yeah?
My dad was... So that's where my parents met. My dad was stationed in Germany.
Oh.
My mom was fleeing Thailand.
Whoa.
Her first husband was like physically abusive to her, so she was leaving Thailand, and she came to Germany to find her a GI, and found my dad.
She came to find a GI specifically.
Well, you know, I think she was coming to get away, but you know, she wanted a better life for her son at the time, and my dad was in the hospital, and so my mom was taking care of him and cooking him food and. Made him fall in love.
There you go.
And my dad always jokes. He says he tells us a story all the time. He's like, "Yeah, your mom was taking care of me, and then she told me that you were pregnant, and then 12 months later, you were born."
Oh, that's funny.
So, but no, they fell in love.
It was just a really long pregnancy. Just weird. Just kind of weird. I don't know why.
Yeah, she's like 12 months. I don't know, but that's I was funny. Pretty small, but. No, yeah, and then we moved to Colorado, and I was born. Then we lived in Germany for a little bit when I was younger, and then back to Colorado, and I grew up in Aurora, Colorado.
Oh, cool. When did you start training?
Probably around 10.
Yeah?
Yeah, around 10. I have an older brother. He's 4 years older than me. He's my half-brother, and I really wanted to do gymnastics as a kid, and my parents just couldn't afford it. It was really expensive, and so my brother found... a little karate spot at the church just across the street, and it was a community karate thing, and so it was something that all three of us could do, and so yeah, we jumped into it and I fell in love with it. It just took over my life and changed my life.
Did you start competing really quickly?
Yeah, I think so. And at first, it's funny because at first so I would do like the karate tournaments, and so there's point sparring, and then there's the katas. And I thought the katas were silly. And I remember going in and doing point sparring and getting knocked on my butt. And I was like, okay, I think I want to do some katas then. I want to bring some trophies home. So I competed karate from 10 all the way up until I was 18. And so I did a lot of the flashy, like, extreme martial arts katas with the, like, the flips and stuff like mm-hmm. that. But I always came back to sparring because I wasn't good at it.
Mm.
Like, I was like, it bugged me. It bugged me that I wasn't good at it. And then I found my niche because it's point sparring. So you get two points to the head for kicks to the head. So I would just sit back and let them come in and just kick them in the head. Keep him in a couple times and win the fight.
So how did you go from that to, did you go from that to kickboxing, or did you go right into MMA? Like, when did you start training MMA?
So I did karate, and then I got my black belt in karate.
What kind?
American Freestyle. And then, so I think around 18 or 19, I was kind of just exploring, doing a couple different things. So I did wushu for a couple of years, and I competed in wushu. And then I did a little bit of kempo, and then kind of dabbled a little bit into kickboxing. And so it all kind of just happened pretty strangely. I was in college, I was working at Hooters, and I was doing all these like little side jobs, doing photo shoots for this and that. And I was a ring girl for an MMA show. I had never seen MMA. And I remember just walking around the cage and thinking, man, I want to be like on the inside. That looks cool. I think I could do it, because it was mixed martial arts, you know. And I remember talking to a promoter, and he kind of laughed me off and was just like, whatever, you know, you're a ring girl. And it was a smaller local show. Donald Cerrone was actually fighting on that show, and he overheard me. Yeah. And so he came to my work at Hooters, and I wasn't there, and he was just like, left me a note, if you're serious about fighting, get your ass in the gym.
Wow. And then, and where was this? Is it in Colorado?
In Colorado. Mm-hmm. And then I went to go train with Donald, and you know, we gym hopped from place to place. I trained with Dwayne, I trained with Trevor, I trained with all the guys.
Wow.
And and so I took a couple smokers. We'd drive, you know, drive around the region and took a couple smokers. And then it was like at that point when I was still in college, and I just was not happy in college. I was kind of wandering around aimlessly. I was really successful in high school, and you know, it just didn't transfer over to college. I got good grades. I was 3.8, you know. I was going to DU, but I wasn't happy. There was something missing, and it was the martial arts. It was a big part of my life. And
you needed a real challenge. You needed something physical too, probably, right? Yeah. I would imagine that someone growing up doing martial arts as long as you did, you like the thrill of using your body and moving around. It's like that. It's so important. Like once you do that and you compete and it becomes a part of you, the idea of like sitting in a classroom all day and then eventually sitting in a job all day was probably not that compelling.
Yeah, I think so. I think that I was losing myself.
What were you going to school for?
I was going to school, so I was double majoring in theater and sports science.
Mm.
So I was majoring in theater because I got a scholarship for it, and I was doing sports science. I wanted to be like a physical therapist for like a sports team or something like that, mm-hmm. or even a martial arts team. But so I decided to take a little bit a break from that, and my grandma was sick in Thailand. So then I told my mom I'd just go with her for the summer, and we went to visit my grandma in Thailand. And while I was out there, I went to Sit Yat Hong Muay Thai camp, and I absolutely fell in love with it.
Mm.
They made fun of me because of my karate kicks.
Yeah. It's interesting how different karate kicks are than Thai kicks.
Yeah, and they were looking at me like I was crazy, but I was like, but no, I'm a black belt. It's just like, I know what I'm doing. They're just laughing at me. We're training on concrete outside, and these little 5-year-old kids are doing 10-minute rounds, and my feet are blistering up from mm-hmm. kicking over and over and over on the concrete. But I loved it. I fell in love with it. It kicked my butt, and I fell in love with it. And I came back, and I dropped out of college, and I decided to pursue fighting.
Wow. So where did you learn grappling?
So my first MMA fight was kind of just, it was supposed to be an amateur fight. And like I said, I was training with Donald, and he was training at a school in Vail. And so I would work on the weekends and then drive up to Vail and train my grappling and all of it, like all of the MMA. And so
you basically trained MMA together, like uh-huh. you didn't take specific grappling classes, but I would imagine that was the thing that you needed to concentrate on the most, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I figured, okay, it's my pro debut, or it was supposed to be amateur, but the girl that I was supposed to fight fell through. And the only girl that they had available was already pro. She was like 2-0 pro. And of course, you know how Donald is. He's like, whatever, fuck it, just do it. And so
that's a good Donald accent.
So I was like, all right, I mean, we've been training. So I literally had 4 weeks throughout my karate career. We would have grappling nights when we would do grappling, but it wasn't anything like substantial. So yeah, 4 weeks of grappling training. And I figured, okay, you know, I'll just use my stand up to win the fight. And she was swinging from way back here and trying to take my head off. So I ended up taking her down. I ended up taking her down like 6 or 7 times.
Wow.
and winning the fight by taking her down and ground and pounding.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it was crazy.
Did you say while you were doing it, like, wow, this is so weird that I'm doing this?
It was, I wasn't thinking at all. I was just in the moment, having the time of my life.
Were you thinking that this was what you were going to wind up doing, like professionally? Or were you just thinking, I can't believe I'm doing this?
Yeah, that's exactly what I was like. This is so much fun. It was at the Broomfield Event Center. I don't know if that's still called the Broomfield Event Center in Colorado, but
yeah, I think a bank owns it now or something. Yeah, they always change names.
It was so much fun, but that's never wild. In my life I thought I would be
a top UFC contender.
Never.
And on your way, your goal is to be the first mommy.
Yeah.
To ever win a title.
Yeah.
That's possible.
100%.
You're in the hunt right now. Like, what are you ranked?
I'm ranked 7th. Seventh, but I don't think the rankings are anything.
They're weird. Yeah, there's like sometimes someone will beat somebody and then that person's still ahead of them in the ranking. I'm like, explain that.
I don't understand the rankings at all. I feel like I've won my last 3 fights and I've gone down in rankings.
What?
Joanna hasn't fought and she's gone down in rankings. And some of the girls haven't fought and they've gone up in rankings. I just think the rankings are crazy.
Yeah, well, it's a bunch of people get to submit their positions, right? Mm-hmm. Like a bunch of journalists and accepted experts on MMA get to.
I have no idea. I guess when I look at the rankings, sometimes I feel like it shifts depending on who they're trying to push or, you know, just sometimes I feel like just storyline kind of can dictate the rankings.
You know, obviously I'm a giant fan of the UFC. I love them to death. I'm so happy and I would do nothing for any other organization. I never want to work for another organization.
Yes.
But I don't like the way they do things. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of things that I don't like. Mm-hmm. They just cut Elias Theodoro.
Really?
Yeah. One loss. Derek
That's
Brunson.
Scary.
Cut. I'm like, what?
They cut Derek Brunson?
No.
He
lost to Derek Brunson.
I was like, what? He just won.
I'm like, explain that. How do you explain that one? That one doesn't make any sense. There's like some matchups don't make any sense. Interim title shots. Those are preposterous.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, I understand it's a machine and it has to work and they're trying, but it especially for like a fighter whose life depends on the fights and, you know, your livelihood depends on that. And for you just to be out.
Yeah.
It's stressful enough to only fight a couple times a year because you have to divvy up that purse money throughout those times, you know, but.
Yeah. Well, I think people like you are very important for women's MMA because you seem so normal. You know what I mean? Like there's some women you talk to and you're like, well, this girl's fucking crazy. No wonder why she's a fighter. You know what I mean? Like there's some girls that are real aggressive or just bad. Like you talk to Amanda Nunes, you're like, I get it.
Yeah.
Yeah. She should be a fighter. She's,
really?
Yeah.
She's cool.
So cool.
Yeah.
She's so cool. But that's a badass bitch.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? She'll fuck people up. You could tell.
For sure.
You could tell. Just looking at her, mm-hmm. you know, like the way she's built, she's wide. You could tell she's got power.
Mm-hmm.
And she looks like a girl you would not want to fuck with.
Josh called it. He said she'd knock out Cyborg.
That was crazy. I didn't think that she couldn't knock her out.
Mm-hmm.
I think she can knock out anyone. I mean, yeah. I think Amanda Nunes can knock out a lot of guys. She hits so hard.
Yeah.
But I thought that there would be a big weight disadvantage. Cyborg has a tremendous experience advantage, and she's never shown herself to be someone that gets hurt.
Yeah.
Like, even when she fought Jorina Barge, did you ever see that fight in Lion Fight?
I remember seeing highlights of it, because she's just, like, stuck in the, on the ropes.
And Jorina is a elite kickboxer. And Cyborg got dropped and kept coming. I mean, she was pursuing her in the final rounds.
Yeah.
I mean, she was chasing after. She lost the decision, but she gained a lot of fans because she didn't have any pro Muay Thai fights, and she fought a woman who, like, she couldn't get a fight for almost 3 years because girls were ducking her.
Yeah.
Because they didn't want to fight her.
Muay Thai's brutal, I feel like, because my husband and I talk about this all the time, because in MMA, you have options. Like, if you're having trouble in the stand-up, you can take them down, you can work your grappling, this or that. In boxing, you don't really have much options. Either you give up, you get knocked out, or you give up, you know, in the corner. And I feel it's the same way in Muay Thai, except for now you're introducing knees and shins and elbows. And, like, those cut, and you have no way out. Like, you know, so that's brutal.
Yeah, it's a rough sport, and an incredibly exciting sport to watch, and one that I've never understood. I mean, boxing is so gigantic in this country, and Muay Thai has almost no presence, and it baffles me to no end. I mean, they have the product.
Yeah.
I mean, and they have great American fighters. I mean, like Joe Schilling and Kevin Ross, and there's a ton of them. And there's guys like John Wayne Parr from Australia, and all these guys that are exciting to watch and fun, and then there's so many elite kids that are coming up. But there's no mainstream appeal. I don't understand that.
I don't know why either. Yeah. That is crazy to think.
They need a thing like the UFC, where something comes along and they dump a ton of money into it. But the thing is, like, people only have so much time to watch things. So it's like, oh, Deontay Wilder's fighting. I'll watch that. Oh, you know, Tyron Woodley's fighting. I'll watch him.
Yeah.
You know, oh, John Jones is fighting. I'll watch that. What's this Muay Thai? Ah, this fight's on. I'm going to watch Bellator instead. I'm going to watch that instead. It's like it's almost like too saturated.
Yeah, that's true.
But it's a shame.
It'd be cool if they had like a card with all different types of fighting on.
Well, that's what ONE does. You know,
all in the same night.
Yes, ONE FC does that. They'll have kickboxing, Muay Thai, and MMA in one night.
Is it
and
confusing?
No, they let everybody know. You know, this is what they're doing. I think ONE is doing fantastic. They're putting on amazing fights. I mean, and we've seen that these are like legitimately world class fighters. They're beating guys like Timothy Natsuyukin just beat Eddie Alvarez, knocked him out.
And that was crazy.
Yeah, and they cut out all the weight cutting. There's no weight cutting over there. So like when Sage Northcutt fought Cosmo Alexandre, he fought him at 185 pounds because that's really what he walks around at. You know, so there's no weight cutting over there.
That was a brutal hit that he got caught with.
Crazy.
I'm glad that he's okay, but
yeah, he's okay. But yeah, his face has had 8 fractures.
You think it's better for him to cut down?
It's a good question.
Because
it's a very good question.
Because I mean, if he's getting knocked out by that, I'm wondering if maybe he should be walking around lighter, or if, I don't know, because he's pretty lean already.
He's lean, but that fight played out realistically. Like, not that it's better for him or worse for him, but Sage is a young guy. He's 21 or 22 years old. He's got a limited amount of world-class Muay Thai experience. He fought Cosmo, who was a multiple-time world champion.
Yeah.
And it's just a bad fight.
Why would they set that up if they're trying to build him?
It's easy to, like, I've said that too, and people are like, oh, it's easy to say after the fact. You're right. But if I was in Sage's corner, I'd go, hey, bro, there's a lot of fights we should take.
And that was a Muay Thai fight?
No, it was an MMA fight. It was an MMA fight.
Okay.
But Sage is not a wrestler.
Yeah.
I mean, he has taken guys down before, but I would absolutely say that's the game plan. The game plan is tie this guy up and drag him to the ground. Don't be standing with this dude.
I just feel like if you have a background in something, in stressful situations, you always revert back to what you know.
Sure. Yeah.
And so even if he did work his wrestling, he's going to revert back to his, you know, really hoppy movie stance. And that's what it looked like, what happened. He was kind of pulling out, hopping back, and got caught.
Yeah. Well, he was trying that sideways karate style stance. And, you know, Cosmo's just super elite. And if you saw the fight, he fainted a couple times with the left. He set him up like with a switch a couple times. And then as Sage circled off, he went to his right and cracked him. But that guy's just a super elite fighter. I mean, when it comes to striking, I feel like that is where being elite is the most dangerous for an opponent. You know, I feel like if you fight an elite jiu-jitsu guy and he catches you and he submits you, mm-hmm. you live another day.
Yeah.
You know, like Neil Magny and Damian Maia. We found out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Damian gets him to the ground and just strangles him, right?
Yeah.
But that's, he'll be all right.
Mm-hmm.
If you get KO'd by an elite striker, who knows what kind of damage happens to you. You know, when his face got broken, I mean, he's had 8 fractures in his face, his cheek, his orbital. Like, they had to piece him back together again.
So did his orbital detach, do you know? Or?
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know the extent of the injuries. He posted up some images, though. Did you see the images
mm-hmm.
of the x-rays?
Yeah.
It's like, whoa. Like, this is horrible.
Yeah. I mean, so that's how I feel against jiu-jitsu people. When they mm-hmm. submit me, I'm like, oh, okay, like, let's do it again, you know?
Yeah, but exactly.
Then, well, what about Andrade and Rose?
That was
scared.
Crazy. Yeah.
I was scared for Rose.
It was a really bad landing. Landing on her neck like that was terrifying.
That's what scared me, just because we were in Brazil, too, and that crowd was crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody shot up and started screaming, and Rose was just, like, laid out on the canvas, yeah. and I kind of was just, like, wanting her corner to be in there with her because she was just all alone by herself,
right?
You know, and I was worried that she wasn't going to get up. I was like, "Hey, you guys, like, wait to cheer until we see she's okay, because that can
paralyze someone."
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, and if you look at the impact, have you seen the photograph of the landing itself?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's one of the worst ways you could ever land. She's yeah. essentially head first with the neck sideways, and
flattened.
Yeah,
like,
and her neck
there was
is
no space.
Yeah, it's like someone was cranking on her neck. It's mm-hmm. horrible.
Yeah,
that's a bad landing. I mean, the whole thing was bad. She's going for the kimura. Jessica picks her up. She doesn't lace a leg, and she holds on to the kimura, which you just can't do.
Mm-hmm.
You just can't do it. You got to let it go. You
yeah.
know, but she's held on to things before,
yeah.
and you know,
so
and caught
people,
arm bars
yeah.
and triangles and. It's one of those things, you know, you make a mistake.
So, because I know people were talking about it being illegal to slam somebody like that.
She didn't do it on purpose. She
yeah.
just tried to slam her.
Uh-huh.
I mean, she's just trying to lift her up and dump her down. I mean, the illegal slamming is like when Minotauro fought Bob Sapp. Do you remember that?
Nope.
Minotauro fought Bob Sapp, and Bob Sapp literally got him in a pile driver
mm-hmm.
where he scooped. And Bob Sapp was 370 pounds
Jeez.
With abs and on everything that Mexico has to offer. Every steroid that was available, Bob Sapp was on. They said that he used to travel with like a briefcase
oh
filled
gosh.
With roids. Like, it just, I mean, he was a goddamn science project at
yeah.
one point. It was fascinating to watch, right? Because I think to this day, that was probably one of the greatest victories in all of MMA.
Mm-hmm.
Minotauro, who was, he was outweighed by a good solid 130, 140 pounds, like legitimately.
Mm-hmm.
And still got an arm bar off of Bob Sapp.
Yeah.
Jamie, you got it? Yeah, watch this. So look at the size difference. First of all, just see the beginning of the fight.
Oh.
See, so he shoots, but look at the size difference when you see them come out. It is so crazy. Bob Sapp was so big, but look at this. Boom. So that, now Minotauro's neck was fucked up from that forever. Like, that haunted him his entire career. Watch this. Boom.
Oh,
yep.
No.
Yep. See, he tucks his head a little bit at the last second so he doesn't catch it on the top of the head. But all of his weight, all of Bob
oh,
Sapp's
no.
weight. Look at that. Well, I don't even think he tucked it. I think it just
and
gave in.
And he's still going?
He kept going and he fucking submitted him. Minotauro was one of the toughest guys that's ever walked the face of the planet. Look at this. He scoots out. He escapes and gets on top of
this
him.
This is crazy.
Yeah. Well, look at the size
there
difference.
Like three different, four, five different
weight classes. I mean, Bob was so big. And he's probably on EPO.
Oh,
and
my gosh.
Fucking everything. And look at that. Just windmilling with his legs. He was trained by Maurice Smith. You know, Maurice was training him. So he was a legitimate, you know, legitimately trained athlete. And he was so big.
So this is back in the day when there was like 10-minute rounds.
Mm-hmm. 10-minute first round. So Minotaur, I believe it went into the second round, though. I want to say.
What? Oh, my gosh.
I don't remember entirely whether it went into the second round, but I want to say it did. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, look, he beat Ernesto Hoost twice in kickboxing matches. But also goes to show you how hard Crow Cop punches, because Crow Cop flattened him with one punch.
Uh-huh.
Crow Cop broke his orbital bone with a straight left. So Minotauro eventually gets him on his back, and then once he gets him on his back, because Bob Sapp, like, you can only keep 375 pounds going for so long.
Yeah.
I mean, he's just completely exhausted.
No matter how many steroids you do.
Yeah, so this is the end. He ties up his arm and catches him in an arm bar, and Bob Sapp taps. And I was at my friend, whose house was I at? But I was with Eddie Bravo when we saw this, and we were screaming. We couldn't believe it. We couldn't believe it. Because it was like a victory for...
That is amazing.
It was a victory for technique, you know? Yes. That's what it was. Mm-hmm. It was a victory for jiu-jitsu. It was a victory for technique over brawn. It was a perfect example of technique over brawn.
Yeah.
Not that Minotauro doesn't have brawn, and not that Bob Sapp doesn't have technique.
Absolutely.
But if they were the same size, Minotauro would have fucked him up. It would have been an easy fight for him.
He just weathered the storm and wasn't scared to be in there with them.
Yeah, Fedor wouldn't fight him. Fedor said, fuck that. They offered Fedor a fight with Bob Sapp. He's like, nah, I'm good. And he fought Hongman Choi when Hongman Choi was like 7 feet tall. You remember that fight? Caught him in, it was one of the most ridiculous arm bars ever. He caught him in an arm bar, and the arm is as long as this fucking table. It was so crazy.
He had to stretch his arms like this.
That was a ridiculous arm bar. It was a ridiculous arm bar.
That's crazy.
But
you'll never see any fights like that happen. Not anymore. Nowadays.
Well, I still think someone might do it. Yeah, Ryzen could do it. They still do fucked up things with Gabby Garcia.
Yeah,
you've seen
that's
that.
Crazy.
Gabby Garcia is a science project and a half.
That's crazy.
What is that?
I think has she been beaten?
Not that I'm aware of.
Yeah.
How are they going to find someone? A woman who's 240 pounds.
They're not.
She's 240 pounds, jacked, and she's a legit black belt in Brazilian jiu-jitsu.
Yeah,
and she's She's legitimately tough.
I thought I saw a video of her grappling with Mackenzie Dern, and Mackenzie
Mackenzie beat her.
Oh, did she?
I think Mackenzie beat her in a jiu-jitsu match. In a jiu-jitsu match. But in MMA, I don't think anybody's beating her.
Yeah.
I think Mackenzie either beat her or had a draw, won on an advantage, something like that. But look, it is what it is. That's science. Okay? You're doing some stuff. You're doing some stuff to people that's not... Your body's not supposed to have that in there, lady.
It's not.
Telling
you.
It's interesting because like the Bob Sapp thing, like you get to see what happens. Mm-hmm. Like, wow, okay, this is what's when someone just goes for it.
Yeah.
And when Pride, Ensign Inoue was on the podcast and Ensign's hilarious. He was detailing the contract. He was like, it said in all capital letters, we will not test you for steroids.
Yeah.
They were like...
That's what Joey would tell me all the time. Joey Villaseñor. He's been in my corner for the last couple of fights.
Joey's an excellent fighter.
And he would say that. He said they almost
encouraged you.
Encouraged it. Not almost. They basically did encourage it because they just wanted to see crazy things that like came out of comic books.
Yep.
You know?
They wanted you to be jacked.
Yeah.
They wanted you to be gigantic.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean... As long as everybody's doing it, I guess.
I don't think I would never. I wouldn't want to do that, even if I had the choice to do it.
You wouldn't want to.
I wouldn't want to.
Right. I get it. Well, that makes sense, and that's why I think people like you are important for MMA because you are you're a woman.
Yeah.
You seem like a woman. You behave like a woman. You look like a woman. If someone's like, "Look, that girl's top 10 UFC fighter," you'd be like, "What?
Mm-hmm.
No way! Really? She's so normal." Like. But if you saw Gabby Garcia and, you know, that girl's smashing people in Japan, you're like, I fucking believe it.
Yeah,
Jesus. I gotta get the fuck out of this room before she hulks out and starts to flatten me.
Yeah. No, I just, like, I feel like it takes the joy. I feel like it would take the joy out of a victory for
if you did steroids.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you would become something different. The reality is a woman becomes something different when she starts taking male hormones. Mm-hmm. You just do. You become something different. Your tendons strengthen. Your bone structure changes. Your voice deepens.
Mm-hmm.
You become much more like a man. I mean, that's when you see transgender women, when a woman, rather, is a transgender man, she decides she wants to be a man. They start taking testosterone. They get beards.
Mm-hmm.
They have all sorts of strange things happen down below. And they start having a deeper voice and they sound like a man.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what happens to a woman when a woman takes steroids if she's not trying to transition. It's the same thing.
Yeah.
You're just taking male hormones that make your muscles grow far larger than they're supposed to.
Yeah. I remember watching a movie that they did in Thailand. It's called Beautiful Boxer. Have you seen that one?
Yes. Yeah.
But it's the opposite. He wanted to be a woman. But I think he did it the right way, right? If there's a right way to do it, because...
Well, he started as a man and then became a woman and kept fighting men.
Yes.
And that, I think that someone should have told her at the time, like, let's just stop fighting. Let's stop fighting. Or I this is my take on it. Like,
but she needed to keep fighting so that she could pay for the her transitions,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, or, it's catch 22 if there ever was one.
Yeah.
Yeah. But was an elite fighter until the transition, and then you see the skills start to diminish because there's no more testosterone when she's fighting men. But if she was fighting women, she would have a giant advantage still over women, and I don't think that's right either.
I don't think that's fair either.
No one does. Mm-hmm. No one does except transgender people. Transgender people and super progressive activists who have no idea how sports work. It's those are the people that just want inclusiveness and they just want everyone to be okay. And, you know, maybe this is the world I'm looking for. I'm looking towards a world where everyone's included. Yeah, good. Have a transgender league. Have a transgender division. No, I'm cool with that. I'll be happily support them. But you're pretending that that's a woman. Mm-hmm. And it's not. It's a male who's transitioning to a woman. You have an XY chromosome. It's a different thing.
Yeah.
You know, I'm 100%. If a woman says, I want to fight a transgender woman, okay. I'm 100%. That's fine.
Yeah.
But, like, for leagues to recognize that this is the same thing and, like, to say, like, how would you feel if all of the UFC's weight classes in the women's division were dominated by transgender women?
I would feel like... there were some I feel like I should not say something.
Right.
I feel like I'm going to get caught up saying something.
Yeah, let me talk for you. It's fucking bullshit. It's fucking bullshit, right?
Yeah.
You don't have to say anything. And that's how girls feel right now when there's sports being dominated in track and field.
Yeah, that's not how, fair.
It's not fair.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess for me, I've always been, especially like being a female in a male dominant sport, I guess if I can like to consider myself a feminist, not so much a feminist, but I like when I go into the gym, my teammates look at me as a fighter. Like they don't look at me as a female fighter or anything like that. They look at me as their teammate. You know what I mean? And I appreciate that. I appreciate that they treat me as an athlete and all of that good stuff. But I feel like like at the end of the day, like girls need to fight girls and guys need to fight guys. We have different strengths than the guys do, and the guys have different strengths than the girls do. And it's nice for us to have a place so that we can showcase our skills.
Yes, I agree. I think the only problem that I have with that transitioning thing is physical competition. That's it. Physical competition against the gender that you supposedly align with.
Yeah.
You know, you can't do it. But here's what you don't see. Here's what you don't see. You don't see a lot of transgender men who want to fight men. You don't see a lot of women who are taking hormones to become a man who want to fight men.
Men.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Good fucking luck with that, ladies.
Yeah.
Good luck. Stop. This is crazy. Like this idea that you just magically become a woman or you just magically become a man. It's just not true.
Mm-hmm.
And athletes recognize it and rational people recognize it. But there's so much pushback from progressive people who it's like, what percentage of the population are we even talking about here? I mean, it's not even 1%. It's a very strange thing that it's taking over the conversation with bathrooms and competition and sports and so many different things. I'm all for inclusiveness and I'm all for being open-minded and letting people do you.
Whatever you want to do. Mm-hmm.
Be yourself. Be whatever yourself is. I don't know what yourself is. I don't know what you feel. But you can't compete against women. It's that simple. It's really that simple.
It has to be something deeper where they, you know, it and to me, I think it goes back to like that mental, like a mental block where you need some, like a false sense of confidence.
Yes.
I feel like.
Well, it's like sandbagging.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It really is. Mm-hmm. It is the ultimate sandbagging.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, I'm a woman. Like, wait a minute. Where the fuck did you get those hands? You know, that's really like the ultimate form of sandbagging. I mean, everybody, for folks who don't know what sandbagging is. Oh, I was going to bring up smokers too, for folks who don't know what smokers is. If you listen to this podcast, a smoker is small amateur fights that they have in gyms or little arenas or high school gyms, stuff like that. But, sandbagging is like, say if Michelle had a black belt in jiu-jitsu and then entered into a judo tournament as a white belt, and then just fucking flying armbarred everybody. They'd be like, what the hell is this? Where'd you get your white belt?
Yeah.
Like, how do you have a white belt? But we've all seen things like that before. Of course. Everyone has seen things like that before. There's people that pretend they're younger than they really are. They pretend they're lighter than they really are. They pretend because they want to win. This is no different.
Mm-hmm.
It's no different. It really is.
Mm-hmm.
And the people who don't understand it, they have never competed in high-level athletics. It's really that simple. If you've competed in high-level athletics, you know that there's a differentiation. There's a difference between men and women. And there's a reason why we have a men's division and a women's division. It's mm-hmm. not that anybody's better or worse. It's just like there's unfair advantages. Like the Bob Sapp Minotauro thing, that was an unfair advantage. It's just overcome by someone who has superior skill and an iron will.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what Minotauro was when he beat Bob Sapp. I mean, there's no denying that one guy was way bigger and way stronger, but it was overcome. You shouldn't force people to overcome.
Yeah.
It should be even. If they were even, if Minotauro and Bob Sapp were even, here's the fight. Shoot, takedown, dang, on his back, armbar, bang, fight's over.
Mm-hmm.
It'd be like a couple minutes maximum, and Minotauro would have armbarred him.
Yeah. Well, you think it's because people like to see the mismatch and maybe like that underdog story where the person that is, you know, the underdog comes
wins
and becomes victorious?
Like Minotauro. But like, again, Minotauro's neck is still fucked up to this day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, his neck bothered him his entire career from that one
from
pile
that
driver.
Mm-hmm.
375 pounds plus Jeez. His weight all on his neck. It just shows you how fucking tough that guy is. You know the Minotauro story? He was run over by a truck when he was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
That's why he has this giant scar on his back. Like,
yeah.
He was in the hospital for like a year. The guy's an animal. I mean, he's as tough
as
they
come. Yeah, he's like, hey, I got hit by a truck. You're not going to do nothing to me.
You can't force everyone to be that tough. You know, I think it's important to have fairness. And this is why I'm so pro-USADA. I love what they're doing. I
mm-hmm.
love the fact that they're testing the shit out of people. They're just showing up at people's houses at 6 o'clock in the morning.
Yep.
Hey, wake up. Time for a test.
But is it the same in every country?
That's a good question. It's a very good question,
mm-hmm.
right? If someone's training in Russia or Germany or
mm-hmm.
wherever. Yeah, that's a very good question. Mm-hmm. I do not know the answer to that.
Because I know that's kind of one of the concerns for some of the athletes that, yeah, it might be really strict here
mm-hmm.
in the States, but in other states,
right.
is it as strict? You know?
Right, because it is U.S. anti-doping agency. That's
mm-hmm.
USADA. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a good question.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm just saying.
So what do you think? You don't think it is?
I don't know.
I'll talk for you. if there's something fucked up you need to say, just go like this.
I don't know. I guess I just... I can only be concerned with what's under my control. And
right.
So then I'm just going to train and I'm going to get as good as I can get. And hopefully, you know, USADA can take care of the rest. But for me to stress about it is just time wasted, I think, for myself.
Well, I do know of a case where there was a fighter who told me that there was a guy who was openly dirty, as far as what everybody knew.
Mm-hmm.
And he knew that he was going to piss hot, so he went and did some seminars in another country.
Oh.
And just stayed over in another country and just moved around. It's like, so you see this world-class fighter in these weird little gyms, and
mm-hmm.
everyone's like, what is going on over there? And the gentleman who told me said, listen, man, he's ducking drug tests.
Yeah.
That's what he's doing over there.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Look, for sure, like when a guy like TJ Dillashaw gets popped and you're like, wow, TJ, for a world title, he's getting popped? Like, how many people are getting away with this? How many people got away with this?
It's just not worth it. He lost a lot doing that, what he did.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's not worth it. It's not worth it.
Ultimately, it's definitely not worth it because his legacy's tainted. But if he got away with it, is it worth it? I mean, how many people got away with it? Here's the question. How many people retired and we never got to see their drug test from 2006, mm-hmm. 2008? Like, what were you taking?
Yeah.
What were you on? Like, back when they used to have those silly weight drug tests
mm-hmm.
where they would test you at the weigh-ins, which is basically like an intelligence test. Like,
yeah.
Hey, you still taking steroids? Or did you stop a couple of weeks ago? And the testing today is so much more sophisticated. That's why people are getting popped for EPO and a bunch of things that were hard to find.
Yeah.
The thresholds. Like, this is the John Jones thing with the picograms.
Mm-hmm.
What the insignificant amount in terms of like the performance enhancing aspect of it that is in his system. Like, how can they detect that? Well, they can detect that because the machines are way more sophisticated. The drug testing's way, like, if John Jones had tested 2 years ago, he would have tested clean.
Yeah.
But now it's just they're just way better at even something.
The smallest.
Yeah, even if you're taking creatine and that creatine is tainted.
Yeah.
Which is a lot of what these guys. Tim Means, that was mm-hmm. his deal. He was taking a supplement that was tainted. Quite a few guys
yeah.
have legitimately just taken over the counter supplements that they thought were clean and they got something.
That's crazy.
Just some tiny that doesn't have any effect on their performance.
Mm-hmm.
But it shows up and it'll show up for months and weeks and in John's case, like years.
Mm-hmm.
It's been showing up for like a year and a half. It comes on and off.
Yeah.
And when you're cutting weight, that's when it seems to come back. That's when it seems to show because your body's
all the water's gone.
Mm-hmm, you're losing fat. You're losing body weight. Some of it's stored in fat, they think. Mm-hmm. It's very confusing for them. They're trying to figure it all out.
Mm-hmm.
And then all these fucking people online are ranting and raving about picograms and this, and like the science experts, and they think it's all bullshit that John's allowed to fight. He should be banned for life. And
yeah.
like, okay, you're not listening. Like, he tested negative and then he tested positive a week later. And then he tested negative a week after that. Like, what's happening here? Something yeah. weird's happening.
They're still figuring out for themselves.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But I'm glad they're figuring it out because now people get to see, like, hey, look, John Jones was out for all that time for other problems and then for the drug problems.
Yeah.
Like, this is a lot of money that guy lost. John probably lost tens of millions of dollars.
Yeah.
You know?
But he's still young.
Yeah.
He's still young and he's still, you know, and hasn't hit his prime yet, I don't think.
No. I think also... all that knowing that it can all be taken away from you
mm-hmm.
probably tempered him.
Yeah.
Like put him in a better place where he realized, like, I still have this gift
mm-hmm.
of incredible talent. I mean, he's just a natural born fighter.
For sure.
He just knows how to fight. Some guys, they have all the technique, all the talent, but they don't know how to put it together.
Mm-hmm.
John knows how to put it together.
Yeah, that's his jam. He just goes out there and he just does things on the fly that nobody would ever think of.
Yeah.
And it works.
Yeah. He tries
things
out.
It's crazy to watch him train because he's just super lasered in and focused and there's nothing, you know, the building could be getting bombed and it wouldn't matter. He'd just be on the bag working on mm-hmm. his technique.
Yeah. Yeah, I believe it.
It's really cool to watch.
Yeah. Well, he's the outlier, right? I mean, there's special fighters. They're outliers in the sport. And for our era, it was like Anderson Silva, Mighty Mouse, John Jones.
Yeah.
Those are the real outliers where you just watch me just go, Jesus Christ.
Mm-hmm.
Like Anderson, when he was in his prime, you would watch him and you would watch him set guys up. And it's almost like he had cheat codes. Like he could just see what they were doing.
Yeah.
He was just like, oh,
like
I
the
do
Matrix.
This. And you do that. I do this and you do that. Okay. Well, I'm going to do this and I know you're going to do that. And pop, there it goes.
Yeah.
And he would just figure guys out.
Mm-hmm.
It was wonderful to watch, though.
I feel like he opened up like a door for all of the rest of us fight. I feel like with any good fighter, when you watch them fight, it opens up a door in your own mind. Like, oh, like that's possible. I
yes.
can do that. And so I feel like with Anderson Silva did that a lot with his movement, with his head movement, with his variety of punches and kicks and the angles at which they came in from,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I don't know. I feel like Anderson Silva did that. I feel like Ronda did that with her judo. I feel like Machida did that with his karate. And then, you know, I can go down the list of everybody, but I feel like it kind of like goes in cycles,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I mean, it's great for me because I can watch them and I can implement new things. I feel like that's why I've been able to be in the game for so long and still continue to grow and evolve because I get to watch other people and the things that they do and like add that to my tool list, you know?
Yeah, it changes the expectation of what's possible, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think with Mighty Mouse, that was one of the best examples of that because when I would watch Mighty Mouse fight, I would be like, show me someone who's better.
Mm-hmm.
Show me someone who's ever been better than this guy.
Yeah.
Like, I've never seen anybody move better than this guy. Like, he doesn't get hit. Or if he gets hit, it's rare. Like, every three or four fights, someone catches him. Like, John Moraga caught him with a good straight punch.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that was the last I remembered.
I'd like to see him run it back with Cejudo.
I would,
for
too.
Sure,
I would, too.
Know? That was such a close fight. And
very close fight.
And he kind of it blew my mind how, like, nonchalant he was about it all. Like,
yeah.
At the end, he's like, yeah, whatever.
But that's him. DJ is just a special guy.
Yeah.
And he's another one. Like, couldn't be a nicer guy.
Yeah.
Like, if you didn't know that he was one of the best fighters that's ever walked the face of the planet, you'd go, oh, this friendly guy.
Mm-hmm.
He's so nice and normal. He talks like he's articulate. He doesn't talk like a mean person. It's a great it's a great example of like something that's contrary to the stereotypes that people think of when they think of cage fighters.
Yeah.
You know, someone is fighting, which is a weird word, right? Like cage, like it's a, do what do you do,
you
think
do cage fighting? You do that
yeah,
stuff?
Like you're a cage fighter?
You do UFC?
Yeah. You do UFC. Yeah. That's if you're fighting for Bellator. People are like, what's that? Is that like UFC? What is that? What's Bellator? Yeah, cage
times
fighting.
Are changing, though. It's great. I love the competition. I think that's great that there's more options out there for the fighters.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, I think it's very important. I think it's very important. What's interesting, too, about this sport is that it's one of the only sports where you can go back from 1993 to 2019 and you could see massive evolution.
Yeah.
There's no other sport like that. If you go back and watch boxing from 93, you're watching great boxing, world-class boxing. Like, you could take someone from 93 and put him into 2018, like, they would fit perfect. Right?
Yeah,
like,
you think so?
Roy Jones Jr.?
Mm-hmm.
Shit. Roy Jones Jr., when he's in his prime, today everybody'd be fucked. Today.
Yeah, that's true.
They'd be fucked. He was just like, something special. Bernard
Hopkins.
It's just
Hopkins. Like the boxing mentality is like so old school and you got to stick to the traditions. Even it's kind of like taboo to see like fighters switching stance, which some of
really?
Them, like the good ones are.
I How's feel, it taboo?
Josh, like my husband, he boxed, you know, and he has a lot. He had a lot of old boxing coaches that were like, you don't switch stance. Like you stick to your stance and you perfect that stance, you know.
Those people are out of their fucking mind. You watch Terrence Crawford. That's one of the things he does so brilliantly.
Yeah.
He is as good as a southpaw as he is orthodox. And it's one of the reasons why he's so difficult to solve.
Yeah.
Because if you think you got a read on his timing, and then all of a sudden
switch
you're looking
stance.
At a right jab instead of a left jab now, like, oh, shit.
Maybe it's just that I watch MMA and are more focused on MMA than I am in boxing. But when I just, from, you know, having my husband help me out and all this stuff, that's what he's saying is going to be the biggest evolution, or what has started to evolve in boxing, is that they are realizing, okay, you can use both sides now, and that's going to trick them even more.
Well, Marvin Hagler was amazing at that. It was one of Marvin Hagler's best skills, that he could fight southpaw as well as he could fight orthodox. Hagler was one of the greatest fighters of all time, you know, and he was a champion in the 80s.
Oh. Okay.
You don't know Marvin Hagler?
No.
How dare you, Michelle?
I never, karate hottie?
You don't know the marvelous one?
I never even really watched boxing until I met my husband.
Really?
Yeah.
That's crazy. Well, he introduced you to something awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a good time right now to watch boxing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's so many good boxers.
Yeah. I think that's one of the things that he wants me to really work on in order to get my game to the next level is my boxing, you know? Because my kicks are good, my wrestling's, you know, getting better, my jiu-jitsu's good. And if I can put together my punches, and we'll be A-okay, ready to get that belt.
Karate is an interesting martial art, too, that you are really good at, because you have this, you have an excellent ability to use that front leg that most people don't. They don't have, like, you have an awesome front leg side kick, great front leg roundhouse kick. And when you do that, I see that in your fight sometimes. People are like, oh, I got to adjust to this. Because it's like a jab.
Yeah.
But a jab that could fuck you up, like a jab that can knock you out.
Yeah, I think, I guess I owe that to my point sparring days when everybody was bigger than me. It didn't matter because it was by belts.
Right.
And so I was always a smaller one. And trying to get the point off first, I would just use my front leg and kick it out there as fast as I could. But I feel like my kicks have lended to being, I've adopted them as jabs, you know?
So, yeah.
Yeah, and I love it. I think it helps because then it kind of neutralizes the height difference.
Do you train a lot with Winklejohn?
I do.
Winklejohn is he was an excellent fighter, a really good kickboxer, and really good at both styles too, like leg kick style, but also good at, like, he had karate techniques as well.
He was
very good at those transitions between those straight kicks and punches.
Yeah.
As well, you know, that's the thing where a lot of people get confused. It's like a no man's land between kicking and punching with people who are kicking specialists. And you see it, like, even with elite fighters like Raymond Daniels, as he's coming up in his kickboxing career, it took a while before he could make that smooth transition between kicking and punching, because Raymond would be on the outside and he was a world class top of the food chain karate point fighter.
Yeah.
And then got into kickboxing. And as long as he was at a distance, he was fucking people up. But in the transition, the no man's land between the kicking and the punching, he looked awkward. It took a while before he sort of – so some guys like Joseph Valtellini and Nicky Holtzkin, they sort of expose that gap, the no man's land gap. Mm-hmm. That's a problem that a lot of kickers have.
Yeah.
They have that problem with the gap from the kicking to the punching.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. I think that's one of the things that I had to – that was – one of the things that I had to really work on. And I think because I enjoy grappling and jujitsu, that I went straight from kicking to clinch up grappling. Mm-hmm. And I kind of skipped the boxing, the boxing part of it.
How much boxing are you doing now?
Quite a bit, actually.
Is that your main focus?
Yeah. Especially off, you know, off camp. We don't have any, you know, game plans to work on. We're working boxing and wrestling.
Now, when you say you work in boxing, are you just sparring boxing and hitting pads boxing, or are you trying to implement that into MMA training?
I would say both. We're not sparring. We're not sparring right now, boxing. But I was
just working on your hands.
Working on the hands, working on the footwork. And then, so we'll just do strictly boxing, but then we'll do, like you're saying, the transitions. So kicks to boxing and boxing to kicks, and then boxing to takedowns.
Yeah, having things to do when you don't have to think, right? Knowing exactly what to do. Oh, I'm in this position. There goes the knee. I'm in this position. Now I'm throwing a punch. When you see someone going, like, I got to do this. I got to think.
Yeah.
You know, the those transitions, it's when you're in higher pressure situations, that's when those transitions are the most awkward, when you don't have, like, a conditioned response.
Yeah, and I think that's the biggest thing that I've – really been able to work on is is the blending of all of it. I feel like so many of us we train specific boxing, specific MM or kickboxing, jiu-jitsu, wrestling, whatever, but we never really blend it together. And I think that's the most important part. Is,
well, that's why George was so great. George St. Pierre was so amazing at transitions. Like, you never knew what he was going to do. He was so unpredictable. He was going to punch you or he's going to take you down. So everyone's worried about everything. You didn't know what was coming. Yeah, that's why I always encourage fighters, like, even if you're a really good striker, man, you got to attempt takedowns. You got to keep people honest, because otherwise people are just going to settle in and never worry about your takedowns. And then they have an extra degree of comfort with their striking. And you can get caught with stuff you wouldn't get caught with otherwise.
Yeah, and I just feel like, in MMA, you have so many opportunities. Like, why would you limit yourself on those opportunities? I remember one of my fights. I was fighting this girl who was like a 10-time boxer in MMA. And so I'm like, oh, this girl's coming into my world. I'm going to show her what's up. But then, and I was beating her the whole first round, kicking her out, keeping her out with kicks, keeping her out with punches. And I remember going back to my corner and saying, man, this is too easy. Like, I'm, you know, I'm piecing this girl up. And just me saying that to myself, I think something in my head switched. But I went back out and ended up, I think what happened was I told myself, okay, you're piecing her up with what you know. Go out there and beat her at her own game.
Oh, Jesus. Did you talk to your corner about that?
No, I told my. I think it was just like a mental, like, this is too easy. I'm going to make it challenging, more challenging on myself. I didn't tell my corner that. It was just like, you know how sometimes when you're in a fight, you have like a million thoughts that go through your mind in a split second. And I think
that was one of them.
Yeah.
I'll show this bitch what's up.
Yeah, and at her own game, which is stupid because it's MMA. So I stood in front of her, and then she cracked me, and I saw stars, and I stood in front of her, and I didn't take her down, and I was trying to, you know, exchange with her, and she cracked me again, and, you know, I was waiting for her to stop so it could be my turn. And she never stopped. And I got TKO'd, you know, but I mean, lesson learned, but I was just so stubborn in my thoughts that I was like, oh, I'm going to beat her at her own game. What are you talking about? You're fighting MMA.
Right.
And I was so mad at myself after the fact because I beat myself. I just beat myself when I went back out there.
Well, that's that old adage, you win or you learn. And mm-hmm. you obviously, this is something that stills in your mind to this day. You learned.
Yeah.
But that's a part of what makes a champion. Like that desire to show, I can beat you anywhere.
Yeah.
That crazy belief in yourself. Like, mm-hmm. oh, fuck this bitch up standing. Those thought processes are so crazy because the reason why you get so good in the first place is because you love challenges and you want to do this difficult thing.
Yeah.
So you literally made it more difficult.
Yeah. I don't know why I would do that, but that is exactly why I continue to fight now. You know, mm-hmm. I think I was nervous coming into the UFC because I was coming up from 105. You know, I was talking to my husband and saying, like, what are we doing? Like, do you think I can make the jump up and still hang with these girls? And
would you be fighting at 105 if the UFC had a 105?
I don't know. I guess it would depend. I think it would have to be worth it.
To make the cut?
Yeah. I feel like my last couple of cuts at 105 were pretty brutal. Like,
You're not supposed to ask a woman.
My eyelashes were falling out.
Your eyelashes were falling out?
Yeah, like I was dehydrated that my, you know how your eyes sink in. Mm-hmm. Or I remember wiping my eye and just looking down and like a whole row of eyelashes were like on my arm. And
that's like when people get syphilis.
Oh,
teeth start falling out. Shit.
I was sickly for sure. Like
wow.
They had to check your vitals after weigh-ins, and the doctor wouldn't release me because he couldn't find my heartbeat, like my heartbeat, for like an hour.
He couldn't find your heartbeat because mm-hmm. you were so dehydrated.
Yeah.
Whoa.
So, I just think that also that last cut was I did it too quickly, I think.
What do you walk around at?
Like 132, 134.
And when you make the cut down to 115, how slowly do you do it?
I usually have about 8 week fight camp. And so I do like pound and a half, 2 pounds a week.
Yeah, so for you to get to 105, yeah, don't do that. That sounds that sounds crazy.
Well, back when the last time I fought at 105, when I was fighting at 105, I was probably walking around at like 25.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Still,
mm-hmm.
that's 20 pounds of weight for a 100-pound person. That is 20% of your body weight.
Yeah.
That's a significant amount to drain yourself. I mean, if you think about a welterweight losing 20 pounds, it's a good cut.
Mm-hmm.
But an atom weight person, that's so much weight.
I know. I feel so much healthier now. I feel like when I'm in camp, I can focus on training.
Yeah.
And having good energy, you know, going 100% rather than going 70% and then going to do more cardio. So I absolutely feel like more healthier. I feel like I've been able to put muscle on. I feel like I'm stronger and just happier training.
Yeah. Well, you're seeing that from so many fighters. And that's one of the reasons why to go back to this 1FC thing, I love what they're doing, that they've eliminated weight cutting.
Yeah.
And they do hydration tests on people. They make sure you're not cutting any weight. And I think the UFC is missing the boat. They want to test for steroids, which is fantastic. Mm-hmm. 100%, I support that. They should test hydration too. This weight cutting is nothing but it's just sanctioned cheating. That's all it is. You're not 115 pounds, right? But everybody is going to cut down to 115, and then you're probably going to go back up to like what do you when you fight when you get into the cage? What do you think you weigh?
This last time I got back up to 128.
Yeah, see, that's what you really weigh.
Mm-hmm.
Like, why is everybody saying she's fighting at 115? She's not fighting at 115. Like, when you say Tyron Woodley fights at 170, no, he doesn't. No, he weighs 170. You know, Kamaru Usman, he's not 170.
Oh,
he weighs 170 for a very small time.
What? Maybe it's just kind of like the old school mentality or just the idea of that being the last challenge that you go through before you step into the octagon that I enjoy. And not that I enjoy it, but again, we're going back to challenges and it's like one of those things like, all right, like, you know, take yourself to this point and if you can get through that without breaking, then me and you can go to battle.
Right.
I don't know. There's just something to that for me.
I see what you're saying. So it's another challenge. Like you have there's a series of challenges.
Yes.
There's the training, there's the mental preparation, and there's the weight cut.
Mm-hmm.
All these things are together.
And I feel like that's like the last step. It's like, you know, it's a battle within yourself.
Is that the Death Star on your forearm? What is that?
This is.
It looks like the Death Star from a distance. I was trying to figure it out.
It's an actual silhouette of my husband and I.
Oh, that's so cool. So it's a circular silhouette with the mountains and the trees. Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
That's really cool. That's very unique.
Thank you. It does kind of look like the Death Star, though.
From a distance, I was like, should I have a fucking Star Wars geek?
Actually, I don't remember the last time I've seen Star Wars, but yeah.
So the weight cut, though, the only problem with it is it's bad for you.
Yeah.
I mean, I understand that.
I don't cut much. I probably cut 4 pounds of water weight.
Oh, that's
when
great.
When I show up fight week, I'm probably like 4 or 5 pounds off.
Right. But if you just ate normal, wouldn't you be healthier? Like if instead of getting down within 4 pounds of the weight, like because you're going to go up to 128 the day you fight, right? So that's an additional 13 pounds. Where's that coming from? It's coming from somewhere.
Yeah.
Right? So you're doing something.
I understand the thought process. I was talking to one of the doctors about it in my last fight because he was like, so strange that you go through all of this just to be the same weight the next day.
I know. Doctors are so smart.
And I just looked at him like, that is strange.
It's fucking stupid is what it is. It really is. For the sport.
Yeah.
Not you personally, no, but it's what you have to do if you want to compete in the sport.
I guess just because I've been doing it for so long, it's just mm-hmm. And in my head, it's like, you know, there are only a couple things you have to do as a fighter. Cutting weight is one of them. If you can't do that, then, you know, it is hard. I feel it's a process that you have to go through and you have to be mentally prepared to go through it. Mm-hmm. And if you do it right, it should only be water that you're cutting, even though that's silly to do. I don't know how to.
It's silly to do.
Yeah.
It's not good. It's never good to just cut that water. It's just not. It's not good for you. But if you do it, if you do it intelligently, where you're not cutting too much weight, it's not that bad.
Yeah.
But so many people are doing these brutal 30-pound weight cuts.
I feel like at that point, it's not a benefit for you. Like for some people, they are the bigger person coming into the octagon the next day, but you're gonna reach a certain point where cutting weight is not a benefit for you.
Maybe that's. If you can do it and you pull it off, especially if you're young and you figure out how to do it correctly and replenish your electrolytes, you know, it is an advantage to be bigger. But the reality is whatever weight class that is, that's not what you weigh. Mm-hmm. You don't really weigh that much. It's crazy. Like it should be about skill versus skill.
Yeah,
it shouldn't be about who's got the best scientists.
I agree. So I mean, so what do you think? You think Andrade would still be a 115er?
No chance.
No chance?
Not a fucking chance in hell. No, no, no. She's bigger too. She fucking struggles.
Yeah.
She struggles for 115. Uh-huh. But then you've got Valentina. It's like, I think that weight class, it's really interesting, right? When you're talking about weight classes, if you're talking about the difference between 105 pounds and 115 pounds, it might only be 10 pounds, but it's a giant percentage of your body weight.
Yeah.
And then you look at MMA in the men's division and you have, you know, 155 and you have 170. You have that 15-pound gap. That's a big gap.
Mm-hmm.
It's a giant gap.
Yeah.
I think this should be every 10 pounds. Every 10 pounds for men. And for women, I think there's a real good argument that it should be every 5 pounds. But if Dana heard this, he would find whatever hairs he's got left and start plucking them out of his head. Tell Logan to shut the fuck up.
Plucking his eyebrow hairs.
He doesn't even like the idea of a 165. I'm like, God damn, that's a no-brainer.
Yeah, there's plenty of fighters out there that are willing to fight and just give them a place to do so. And
guys who would be champions because that's their real natural weight class.
In betweens. Yeah.
I think that what ONE FC is doing in terms of weight cutting is the way to do it. But the other side is they're not doing the same thing that USADA is doing in terms of steroids.
So they're just not able to take steroids.
100%. 100%. You talk to guys who compete over there and it's like, yeah, I mean, there's some testing.
So would you rather fight somebody that's heavier than you or somebody that's taking steroids?
It's a very good question. Because if they were not just taking steroids but also taking EPO, there's a lot of different shit that people can take, you know, that can give you more endurance. Like EPO is a scary one because the person has more gas in their tank to beat you. They have more. They can hit you. They can take shots better. They can recover better. And then they can come after you. And then they'll have more gas in the tank than maybe they could put you away.
Where I'd rather fight somebody that was heavier than me and depleted from cutting water weight than somebody that was taking steroids or EPOs, for sure.
For a woman, I think for sure.
For sure.
And I think there's For women, there's a real argument that once someone has ever taken steroids, that you've altered your chemistry enough and mm-hmm. your physiology enough that you're forever going to have some sort of an advantage.
So then there's nothing you can do about that.
Maybe
deduct a point before you even get in the octagon.
That's not even good enough. So many KOs people, right?
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. How often do you spar?
I would say heavy sparring once a week.
Once a week.
Like, so we do... MMA grappling on Mondays. Tuesdays is a heavy sparring. It's the 16-ounce, let's throw down sparring. Wednesdays is wrestling. Thursdays is MMA glove sparring. So it's kind of more just accuracy, like light on the striking, heavy on the grappling. And then Fridays, technical work, technique. Stuff like that.
Now, you're at a gym. You're at Jackson Winklejohn, which is one of the best gyms on the planet Earth, but also a gym that's filled with savages. I mean,
yeah.
There must be a lot of chest bumping and a lot of people that are trying to test people. And there's got to be girls who are there who look at a girl like you and say, hey, this girl's where I want to be.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I've talked to males who train there and say, man, let me tell you something. There's some Russian cats that just show up out of nowhere and try to take your head off.
Yeah. And they go outside and smoke some cigarettes and drink some vodka.
Are they smoking cigarettes?
Some of them.
That's weird.
Fighters are crazy. You get the funniest, coolest stories from meeting fighters all around the world.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Jackson's is it's a shark tank. Like, you're not going there to find Nemo, you know?
You're finding you know Jaws. Mean?
Yes, exactly. So you have to have a good set of skills before you get there in order to kind of hold your own.
Right.
And we do actually have an amateur team right now that is run by Joey Villasenor, and he's done an amazing job with the amateur team. And so we've kind of been able to separate the classes in that sense where Joey is kind of overseeing all of the amateur fighters, and he's building these amateur fighters. And when he feels like they're ready to come and train with the pros, he'll give them the go, you know, or do a trial run where they train with us for 1 week and see if they're ready and, you know, for a higher level of competition. And then if they are, then they stay. And if they're not, then they come back to the amateur team. And it's actually worked out quite well.
Oh, that's great. So do they start people from fresh, like no skills at all?
Some.
So there's classes there for total beginners?
Yeah. It's crazy if you ever, like, go into a gym and see, like, when you see, like, amateurs or people that have, like, zero training spar versus, like, professional fighters spar.
Yeah.
It's crazy. It almost looks more dangerous.
Yeah, it is more dangerous.
Like, I would not want to be in the cage with some of those people that, like, because you just don't know where the punches or kicks are coming from.
And they're all coming full blast.
Exactly. Yeah. 100%.
They don't have any control.
No, yeah.
Well, I always say that about jiu-jitsu.
Mm-hmm.
Jiu-jitsu is the same thing. The last thing you want to do is grapple with a really strong guy who's about to get his blue belt.
Yeah. Oh, geez, yeah.
You just spaz
everybody's
out on you.
Egos gets in the way. I think that's why they match up high level with low level, don't you think?
Like, sure, so yeah. Someone can control you and calm you down and, yeah.
I love jiu-jitsu. I can't wait to, you know, to get my black belt in jiu-jitsu. And I think it's kind of brought me back to my more traditional background where, you know, there's a little bit more structure when it comes to that.
The belts and things.
Yeah,
the belts. Are you training with the gi?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Now, how much of that do you use a lot of grips? Like, do you grab collars and sleeves and things like that?
I try.
You do?
I try to force myself outside of my comfort zone because I am so used to grabbing wrists, grabbing shoulders, and you know, right at the crook of the elbows and stuff like that. And I find myself going for those grips because that's just what I've done for the last decade. But because I am stepping into their world, I want to learn. I want to learn the grips, and I want to learn all of that stuff. You know?
Yeah, it's great if you want to compete in jiu-jitsu with a gi.
Mm-hmm.
But I think for MMA, I think the best benefit of jiu-jitsu with a gi for MMA is defensive for submissions because you get caught in things you can't power out of them because it's not slippery.
Uh-huh. And I'm slippery. Like I love no gi because I can slip out of things and I'll just wait. until I have a little bit of space, and then I'm out. Yeah, I'm just and I'm just out. But I can't do that in gi. So what I'll do a lot of times is I'll go train gi, and I'll do the technique class, and then when it's time to go like do live rolling, I just take my gi off, and then I go no gi.
That's smart. So that way everything you're doing is applicable in MMA, because one of the things we used to see in the early days of MMA, you'd see these gi world champions, like elite level world champions, and they'd fight in MMA and they lost all of their technique because everything was collars and sleeves and pants, and everything was grabbing things. Whereas instead of now, they try to go to cable grips or overhooks and underhooks, and they're all confused. They they're like, their technique is off. And they would be like a blue belt or a purple belt. World champions.
I think it's great. Like my, my professor now, he, so I'll be rolling with his, with his wife or some of his students, and he, like, it's weird because they're getting me ready for my fights, but I'm also getting them ready for worlds and stuff like that. So depending on who's getting who ready is what he'll call out if we're going. And I'm, you know, there's, I'm sitting in their guard. He'll tell them that they have to get active. They're like, he'll straight up say, if she was fighting, you should just be punching in the face. You got to move. You got to do something, you know? So I think it's good just to give them a different perspective as well.
Have you ever watched combat jiu-jitsu?
I've seen a couple, but where they get to slap them in the face and stuff like that. Yeah, I've seen some of it.
That's interesting because it shows you where there are these gaps where, like, hey, this is an MMA, but if it was, you'd be getting pounded on right here. Like, you can't just hang out. Like, there's moments in jiu-jitsu that are unrealistic in self-defense situations or in a fight situation.
Yeah, and that's where I get frustrated, but it's good. I need that frustration because I'll be in a position and in my head I'm like, I could just punch you right now in the face. But I can't because we're grappling.
So your schedule that you're laying out, is this the schedule of Jackson Winklejohn? Is this just their schedule? So,
yeah, that's what I do in the mornings at the gym.
So who sets up, like, when you're in camp, when you have to do, you know, you've got a fight, it's 12 weeks from now. Who sets up your schedule?
I think what we do is we get a fight scheduled, and then we get all the coaches in together. And so my jiu-jitsu coach, I go to Gracie Baja for jiu-jitsu. So jiu-jitsu, wrestling, you know, Coach Jackson, Coach Winklejohn, Joey Villasenor, and my husband. And my husband's with me all the time, so he kind of oversees everything. And we just sit down and we talk about all the things we need to get together. I do one private with Coach Jackson a week. I do two privates with Coach Wink a week. I do a private with Coach Villasenor, and then I do all those in the morning. And then I work out at my house as well, and then I do jiu-jitsu.
What do you do at your house?
It depends on the day. Sometimes we do simulations. We'll do, like, round simulations. Sometimes it's just hardcore cardio. Sometimes it's just technical.
Do you have something set up in your garage or something?
Yeah.
That's nice.
We got a home gym. We got a clear light sauna. We got a Furo Health.
What's a clear light sauna?
It's like, it's an infrared sauna. And then we have a cold plunge.
Oh, nice.
And so,
so you can get something in at home.
Everything. If we needed to, we could do our whole camp at
home. Oh, that's great.
But I really enjoy being at the gym around my teammates and around my coaches and just pulling energy from them, you know.
Sure. What about strength and conditioning? How often are you doing that?
I do strength. I do more strength and conditioning when I'm out of camp. So, like, right now I'm doing strength and conditioning like 3-4 times a week. But when I'm in camp, it depends on my body and it depends on what I'm needing at the time. But I usually once or twice a week, and then I run just for maintenance, just for like meditative running, you know, nothing hard.
So like longer distance, but slower.
Yeah, but not even too long. Like couple 3 minutes, 3 miles. Yeah, nothing crazy.
That hill that Jackson loves to throw people up, what is that all about? It's, that looks crazy.
It is crazy. It's Coach Jackson always says, if the mountain can't beat you, nobody can beat you. You know, it's like that Mother Nature. Mother Nature is a mother, you know.
There's something about that steep-ass hill, too. Yeah, you watch crazy. Everybody, the whole team running up it. You're like, ugh.
It's crazy because, well, there's that one. But then Coach Wink has another one, and that one's just insane. You can't sprint up it. You, like, crawl up it. And it's,
really?
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
How steep is it?
It's so steep you can't run. You have to, like, you have to, basically, the first three sprints, there's 10 sprints to the top. And then you slowly jog back down because it's really steep. But the first three, you really can't sprint up, but you kind of have to bear crawl up the mountain.
As fast as you can.
As fast as you can. But the one, the Hill of Tears is crazy because...
That's what they call it?
The Hill of Tears, yeah. It's like it goes up, and then it goes up. So, like, when you think you're almost there, it, like, cranks up even harder, and then you have to get to the top, and it'll test you for sure. It can break you.
Well, that camp is known for its endurance. Mm-hmm. Like, the fighters that come out of that camp are known for having great cardio.
Yeah.
And how often does Jackson make everybody, or Winklejohn make everybody do those hills?
I think it just depends. We used to do them as a team quite a bit on the weekends, but you know, Coach Jackson, Coach Wink.
Is this it right here?
Yep. Oh, that's me. That's my sister.
That's you and your
that's my dog, my Dobie. It doesn't look like anything really.
Oh, it looks like it to me.
Yeah.
I'm used to running hills. I know what it's like. That looks terrible. Looks like that.
Yeah, that's what it feels like.
Yeah. But it's amazing how gravity is one of the best things to work with. Like, get a good pitch, good steep angle, mm-hmm. and try to run up that. It's one of the best things for strength and conditioning, for just conditioning your lungs and your ability to recover.
Yeah. Yeah, I love it. I think that, again, it's another one of those things that can really break you. And I think it's just like a theme, like a consistent theme in fighting is will you break, you know?
Right.
If you break, then you're not meant for it, you know? Or maybe you are and you just need to heal up and go back at it and try it again. But
when you, in terms of your mental endurance, I mean, that's what we're talking about, right? We're talking about fortitude and your spirit, your indomitable spirit. If you go back to when you first started fighting versus now, like, your tolerance must be through the roof. Like, what you can tolerate, what you can endure, and your belief in yourself.
Yeah.
All that stuff, I feel, evolves just like your skills do.
Yeah, 100%. And but it's crazy, too, because, you know, we all have our own separate journeys. And I feel like when you first start fighting, just like when you're a kid and you jump off of things and you're fearless because you don't know what it feels like to get hurt. And then you break your leg, and then you're like, well, I'm never doing that again. You know, I feel like it's the same in fighting. Like, when you see a lot of amateur fighters or new fighters, they go out there and they just do whatever because they're fearless. Yeah. They've never been knocked out. They've never been hit. They've never broken anything. And so they're just going to go out there and be fearless, and then they get knocked out or submitted. And then the next time they go out, they're not as free.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the true test is to see if, you know, you can deal with those challenges and allow it to make you grow versus, you know, petrify you and make you go backwards,
right.
You know.
Do you do any psychological training? Do you have a mental coach or a hypnotist or anything along those lines?
I do. I have a sports psychologist, Dr. Shandon, and he's been working with me for my last three fights, and I've won all three fights, and I think that's a big reason why, for sure.
Yeah, I think that is a giant overlooked factor. Mm-hmm. And some people get along great without it, but could they be even better with it?
Absolutely. That's the
yeah, I think so as well.
Absolutely. There's so much that goes into fighting that I think people don't see. You know, I think it's just like with anything in life, like how long it takes to make a movie versus the actual movie. And what goes into that 15 minutes of a fight that nobody even knows, you know, not just 8 weeks, but your entire, you know, training before that. You know, for me, it's, you know, I've been doing martial arts since I was 10 and fighting professionally for over 10 years. And so it's an accumulation of all of those things. But each fight presents its own problem. And if you're not mentally prepared for it, if you're not prepared physically, if you're not prepared, like, spiritually, emotionally, like, hormonally, if that's even a word.
It is.
Everything has to line up that one night, those 15 minutes or 25 minutes, in order for you to win. And you can definitely beat yourself before you even step into the octagon.
So what kind of stuff do you work on with your psychologist without giving any too much away?
I talk to him about this all the time because it's like my secret sauce, right? But how he explains this is everybody knows what you're supposed to do, right. But you have to put in the work. Just like physically, you have to put in the work. Mm. Like I can sit up here and I can tell you what I do, but it's not going to make a difference unless you actually put in the work to strengthen your mind mentally. We do a lot of... So your opponent, it's not like you can practice sparring them because you've never fought them before. And so how he explains it to me is it's just a repetition, you know, of the mind. And so you just have to really, I think, explore your imagination. And for us, we practice the fight in our head. And some days are harder than others. Sometimes I win the fight in the first 10 seconds of the round. Sometimes it's all five rounds and it's a war and I win that way. But you have to see yourself going through every different scenario. And there are millions in MMA. And you just practice them over and over and over.
So it's essentially just going through that? Or do you prepare your mindset?
For me, I have a set of power words, is what he calls them.
Power words.
Mm-hmm.
Want to tell us what they are?
And so, yeah, I can. Confidence. Flow. Vicious. Let me think. I'm trying to see. Mom champ.
Mom champ.
Yeah.
Because you want to be the first mom champ.
Yes, sir. Healthy. There are a couple of others as well. Mm-hmm. But the one word is not just a word. It's like a whole thought process. So when I say one word, it feeds into... an entire feeling, if that makes any sense.
Mm.
And so instead of having to have a conversation in my mind, which takes way too long, I just say confidence and it takes me where I need to be. And eventually you shouldn't even have to do that. You should just be in the moment and just allow your mind to connect with your body.
Mm. Do you do any meditating at all?
Yeah. I mean, I would say it's kind of a meditative. I would say it's more of a practice than it is meditation because I'm not trying to clear my mind. I'm really trying to focus on something specific.
Right. But mm-hmm. Outside of that, you don't meditate?
I wouldn't say so. Maybe in my runs. Sometimes right. When sure. I run, that's when I clear my mind. What about you?
Yeah, I've been doing it a little bit, but most of what I do when I get in the tank,
uh-huh.
Float tank.
I like float tank.
Do you use one?
I have before. Mm-hmm. It feels like you're floating in space.
Yeah, it's amazing. Mm-hmm. Does Jackson's have one?
No.
They should have one.
We should, huh?
Except you wouldn't want to go in there after guys. They're disgusting.
We have a hot sauna at the gym, and there's tons of people. So it gets good use.
Yeah, no, I'm sure. The hot sauna, though, is different than a float tank. Because float tank's so personal. It's just one little, you know, yeah. In there, you're naked.
Uh-huh. They showed me yours, and it felt mm-hmm. hotter than the ones that I've ever done.
Yeah, temperature.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
94 degrees. That's really? What it should be. Yeah, it should be the same as the surface of your skin.
As your body temperature,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Because it was crazy. I remember doing it one time, and I kind of drifted off, and I remember almost waking up and feeling like I was like floating in space.
Yeah, sure.
Almost like kind of panicked because I didn't have a sense of where my body was.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's what triggers these weird psychedelic states. But if you can find one and use it on a regular basis, it works great with visualization. Mm-hmm. A lot of athletes, UFC and other sports as well, they use it for visualization. Mm-hmm. Like they'll think about passes, like throwing a pass,
yeah.
And then watching someone catch it. They'll visualize things and go through the technique yeah. In their head. And I've done that with jiu-jitsu as well. I've done that with certain techniques that I was really trying to learn. You could do it as if you're rolling. Mm-hmm. You know, like you're just like picturing your body going through the different positions.
Yeah. Yeah. That's basically what we do with the mental training. And it probably just take it up a notch in the float tank.
Yeah, I'm sure.
But a lot of times, like when I meet up with my with Dr. Shenden, we meet up at noisy places like Starbucks or, you know, or at a coffee shop or something like that. Mm. And it's because he wants that life is always going to have distractions.
Oh, that's interesting.
And, you know, you need to be able to focus with the distraction, especially me. Like, there's so many things going on in my life with being a mother and a wife that sometimes I can use the distractions as an excuse to justify why I'm not getting things done or this or that, you know.
Right.
And so that's something that I've really been working hard at, is to not use those as excuses, but more so to allow the distractions to happen and choose to stay focused anyways.
Mm. Mm-hmm. There's quite a few women's MMA fighters now, but it's still small in comparison to men.
Mm-hmm.
When you meet young girls that look up to you, do you recognize that there's a very critical and it's a very small role. There's and small in terms of a small amount of people mm-hmm. providing that role
yeah.
as role models to young kids that yeah. are thinking about fighting. When a young girl meets you, like, oh my God, it's the karate hottie. Like, is it weird to you? Like, what is that feeling like to you when you meet a young girl and you say, oh my God, this is me when I was 16?
Yeah, it's amazing. It really is to know that just through my story that I've touched people's lives, you know. I get approached a lot by parents, you know, that are happy that I'm pursuing what I'm pursuing, even being a mom, you know. So I think that's really cool, just because I feel like when I was pregnant.
How old's your daughter now?
She's 8. Yeah. So when I was,
I thought she was much younger for some reason.
I know she's a shrimp. That's why.
Maybe it's all the pictures when she was younger too.
Yeah, she's itty bitty. I this might be too much information, but after I had my daughter, she's been to every single one of my fights, I had my first fight back when I was 10 months old and I was still breastfeeding. I like breastfed her.
When she was 10 months old, not when you were 10 months old.
Yes, sorry. When she was 10 months
Wow, you had a fight while you were breastfeeding?
Yeah.
That was your first fight?
My first fight back.
Oh, okay. How many fights did you have before your daughter?
I had a good amount, I'd say. I don't even know.
Has you been fighting for 10 years professionally?
12 years.
12 years?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, a good amount. I was 25 when I had her, when I was pregnant. But yeah, I just remember being pregnant and being, everybody talks about like postpartum depression, but I was really depressed during my pregnancy. I mean, don't get me wrong, I loved being pregnant and there was a lot of memories that I had with her being in my belly and me feeling her and all of this and that those moments I treasure forever. But I was depressed. Like, I couldn't do what I wanted to do. It's not like I could go out and, you know, if I was feeling bad, I couldn't just throw the gloves on and go out and spar and hit somebody in the face, you know. Mm.
You know, normal things.
That's what you do to relieve stress. And I just, I watched everybody get better.
Oh.
And I watched everybody progress and fight. And it, you know, it ate me alive. And I there was just so much uncertainty and so much unknown. Was my body going to be the same? You know, was I going to even want it? Was I going to have time to do it? There was just so much that I didn't know. And so I was really down then. And I get a lot of moms that approach me and they tell me that because I went back and continued to pursue my dream, that they did too, you know? And I think that that's cool.
That is cool. Now, when you say you had your first fight back 10 months, that's a really, for people that don't recognize, that's a very short amount of time to rebound from mm-hmm. giving birth, then get yourself back in shape, then get yourself into fighting shape
yeah.
where you're like, I'm ready to take a fight, and yeah. then train for the fight. I mean, that is a incredible process to go through in 10 months.
It was crazy. It really was. My body was, when you have a baby, your bones kind of like drift apart from each other, and you gain weight. And after I had my daughter, I found out that, well, during my pregnancy, I had gestational diabetes, and I gained like 50 pounds. I gained a lot. Like, I looked like the blueberry on Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. But
how long did it take you to bounce back? Were you in the gym again?
I probably stayed with my daughter for the first 3 months that I had her, and I just wanted to be a mom. I just wanted to be with her, and I wanted to nurture her and, you know, enjoy my time with her. And I think it was after 3 months where I was like, I want to
kick somebody in the head.
Kick some butt. Yeah. I want to relieve some stress. So, and Coach Wink and Coach Jackson and all my teammates were so supportive. And so I would come into the gym and I'd have, you know, my diaper bag in one hand and my gym bag in the other and my car seat. And I'd come into the gym and I'd set it all down and I'd get wrapped up and she'd be in the car seat and she'd chill out. And
wow.
If she would start to cry, Coach Wink or Coach Jackson would pick her up and then, you know, they'd let me spar. And, you know, if she needed to eat, I would go to the room and feed her and then come back and we made it work.
Wow.
Yeah. So I started training for that, and I really couldn't run to lose the weight because my joints and my bones were like all spread apart, you know?
So when you say spread apart, like what actually does happen?
Well, I don't know like all the science behind it, but they just say that in order to like have the baby, like everything kind of separates from each other. Your bones like loosen and you're like more agile and loose and stuff like that. And so
you felt it?
I felt it.
Big difference in the way your body performed?
Yeah, for sure. I felt it. And so instead of running, I would swim for my cardio, and that helped me. Because it wasn't hard on my joints or anything like that. It kind of helped me get back into shape. And you kind of just go with the flow and figure it out as you go. It was really hard. I was worried that because I got back into sparring and this and that I would go dry, like my milk would go dry. But I didn't. It just, my body just figured, okay, this is what you do. And I still produced milk and everything. And it was really sensitive at first to get hit. And then I just got used to the pain. And then...
Ow! I don't even have one of those. I'm like, yikes. Yeah, I would imagine you're... Yeah, I mean, if your memories, you know, they pump up.
Yeah, it's the body is just so amazing though. Like it'll adapt to what it needs to adapt to. And when I trained, I got used to the pain, and then it didn't hurt anymore. And then, you know, I would only produce as much as she needed. It was really cool. Yeah.
Now, when you fought 10 months, it's pretty incredible for your daughter to have only seen you fighting. That's got to be crazy too, right?
Yeah.
I mean, she can't remember when you weren't fighting.
Yeah.
My mom kicks ass.
Yeah. She has a really cool upbringing, I think. Like, she's surrounded by really cool people. Like, she gets to meet the coolest people in the world, and they're normal to her. Because that, you know, she sees John and Holly, and, you know, that's Auntie Holly to her. And
Right. So
like, you know, her expectations for what she can be in life, I think, are way higher, you know. And I think because she's surrounded by people like that, that she, and that's why I like to keep her around, because, you know, my dad used to always tell me that we learn through our actions, our parents' actions. You know, you walk the walk, you don't talk the talk. And so I think the best teacher can be my actions. And for her to see it through her own eyes, I can tell her this, this, and this all day. But it's a different story when she comes to a fight with me and I'm the champion, the 105 champion, and I'm defending my belt. And, you know, I bust my eye open to the point where you can't see it anymore and I lose my belt. And for her to see that. And for her to see that mommy's okay and that failure is a part of life and that I still love what I do and I'm going to still go after, you know, my set of dreams, because failure is a part of your journey, you know?
That's an amazing lesson for a kid to learn. Mm-hmm. And to see that at a high level growing up with her mother on this giant stage in front of all these people in the crowd and television, that's amazing for her.
Yeah, and because people ask me all the time, like, aren't you afraid that she's going to see you get hurt and this and that? But why would you want to shield them from that stuff? I know it's hard. It's a hard pill to swallow. You don't want your children to see you hurt and this and that, but I'd rather her see it and be prepared for it, you know, because life isn't fair. Life isn't sunshine and rainbows all the time.
Yeah, it's challenging for her, and challenging things for kids. That's how they grow.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Do you have, when you think about your career, do you have a timeline where you don't want to fight anymore? How old are you now?
I'd like to fight for the belt this year.
This year?
Yeah.
You're
33. Mm-hmm.
So you're in your prime. Mm-hmm. Like right now, that's like an athlete's prime is like 30 to like 35, 36.
Yeah.
You're in that zone.
I'm in the zone. I'm confident. I feel ready. I feel like I've gone through my ups and downs. I've gone through all the steps that are necessary for me to be confident to be a contender.
Do you have a timeline when you want to stop?
I would give myself, I don't know, you know, it just really depends on how my career goes, but I would say 3 to 4 more years.
So you're just in the zone. Right mm-hmm. now you're just concentrating on getting things done, fighting for a title. You're not thinking about like planning the future up.
I would like more children.
Oh.
I know my husband doesn't care for him. My daughter doesn't even care for me to have more children. She'd rather it just be the three of us, you know. But I would like more children. And I have taken steps to figure out what I'm going to do when I retire as a fighter. I feel like this story needs to... I need to finish out this story for my own sake and for, you know, millions of other parents out there that, you know, have a dream and don't give up on their dream. And just because they have children, it's a longer road, but it's worth it. You know?
Yeah, I hear you. Now, when you look at the division, it's an incredible division now. It's so talent stacked. Mm-hmm. We don't know what's going to happen with Rose. She's even said she might retire.
Yeah.
And she's a very eccentric person. I mean, she's not motivated by money.
Not
she's
at all.
Very, very unusual.
And I love how honest she is about her emotions.
Yeah,
and,
I do
and
as
very,
well.
Like, she's very vulnerable.
She's yeah. very strong. Mm-hmm. I mean, in terms of like her ability to broadcast that and mm-hmm. tell everybody and project it. So she was... I felt like she was winning that fight.
For sure.
And
100%.
Yeah, she got caught with one of the craziest slam KOs we've ever seen. I mean, you got to go back to like Carlos Newton, Matt Hughes to yeah. have a slam KO like that.
Yeah.
I'm trying to remember. Like it's one of the best slam KOs of all time. Maybe Tito Ortiz, Evan Tanner, that was another one. I mean, slam KOs are rare.
And I love that it came from the smallest division in the UFC.
Right.
I think that is just amazing. I'm just so proud of the strawweight division, if I can say so. But I do. I think it's stacked. I feel like any fight that I have from here on out is championship caliber fight, in mm-hmm. my opinion.
Yeah.
And well, that's why I want to sure. fight for the belt. Like, I want to go for the belt so that it's legit. Like, we're fighting for the belt. You know, and after that, it's a championship fight every time.
Yeah. When you're looking at that division, you have those two, Jessica Andrade, and we do not know where Rose's head is at, what mm-hmm. she wants to do. But if she wanted to have a rematch, they probably would set that up.
Yeah.
Then you have Joanna. Mm-hmm. You have Tatiana Suarez, who's a beast. You have who else in the division stands out to you?
Well, Nina.
Sure.
Tatiana has to get through Nina first.
Sure.
And she kind of just riding under the radar. And it's
Nina
crazy
and Sarf,
to me.
She's badass.
And maybe it's because, and that's a problem that I've had too, is that I'm not as vocal, you know, where mm-hmm. she just goes in there and does her thing. And I think that a lot of people are overlooking her as well.
Sure.
And that's why I'm speaking out now. This is what I want. Mm-hmm. And Josh always jokes. He says you get 100% of what you don't ask for. So I'm asking for it. It's what I want, you know. But yeah, there's Wade Lee. So I know that they're trying to pump her, and she's really good coming out of China. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, obviously Tisha, Claudia, and even the girls outside of the top 10 are dangerous. It's a stacked division, and it can go.
It's probably the most talented division in women's MMA.
I would say so, for sure. Technically and heart-driven, I would say, for sure.
Now, what have they said in terms of, like, what your future holds? Do they have anything lined up for you? When do they say, like, if they're going to come to you and say, hey, Michelle, we'd like you to fight in July or mm-hmm. August or September, like, when would they come to you?
I just feel like with the way that the rankings are working, if I just take a fight outside of who is the current champ, I'm going to be in the same spot. I've won my last two fights and I've gone down in rankings, you know? So I really would like to hold off to fight the champion, because I feel like any other fight is going to either take me down or keep me in the same spot. So I don't know what they're planning on doing with Tatiana and Nina. But if they're trying to give them a shot before me, I feel like I want the winner of that, and let me and them hash it out to fight for the belt.
Mm, so that would be what you would do as a second choice. First choice is you want to fight for the belt. Second choice is whoever's going to fight for the belt, let me fight her.
Let me fight them first, because Tatiana's only had 7 fights, nothing against her. Like, she's, you know, she's pled her case. I have 3 times as many fights as she does. You know, I've fought for a belt before. I've been a champion before. I've gone 5 rounds before. I fought main event before. I worked my way back up. Give me a shot. Let me be mom champ.
Yeah, you got to get there before somebody else does, right?
That's what I'm saying.
Because the only other person in that, well, Kat Zingano, you know, I mean, yeah. I don't know how her eyeball's doing right now.
I know.
That was a crazy situation. To have all those fights in the UFC and never have someone get toed in the eye like that before. It's crazy. Obviously, you know, that's how Winklejohn lost his vision.
Yeah, it's scary.
Yeah.
It is really scary to think that this is what we do, and that there are so many dangers.
Yeah. I mean, you're in a wild business, lady.
Yeah. But I wouldn't train it for the world. You know, this is what I love doing, so.
Well, that's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Then you're in the right spot. Well, obviously, you know, you rank number 7 in the world. Even it got to be frustrating, though, that you have gone down in rankings, even though you haven't lost.
Absolutely, 100%. And I just, I don't know why they would argue for me not to get the belt, to go for it, you know? Everything's there. The storyline is there.
Yeah.
It would be, you know, technique versus strength, speed versus power.
This is you and Jessica.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And like I said, there were millions of people rallying behind me because they want to see me, you know, get that belt, and I do too. You know, I'd love for my daughter to see that dream of mine come true, and for her to come in the octagon with me and be holding that belt. I think it would be an amazing moment.
Yeah, it's crazy watching kids see their parents win titles and mm-hmm. how amazing it is to them. It's a very strange thing to see, like, that, oh my god, you know, my mom is the champ of the world, or my dad's a champ. We've never seen it, obviously, from mm-hmm. a woman, but that my dad's the champ of the world.
Yeah,
it's a very powerful thing.
Yeah.
So yeah. You're in a holding pattern right now, essentially.
Yep. That's what we're doing.
When was
right
your last
now.
Fight?
Was it April, March, or April? March, or April. Yeah, we're just working. We're getting better.
That's almost a year. No, this April.
This April.
April. What mm-hmm. am I talking about?
Yeah. I fought Carolina Kovalkiewicz.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it was a great fight. I wanted the finish, but you can't force those things, you know? So I'm just going to continue to do what I'm doing and continue to get better. And
what did you think of her loss to Andrade? That was crazy.
I feel like styles make fights.
Mm.
And it was the perfect fight for Andrade to showcase her knockout power, because KK is a pressure fighter and she instinctively will go forward and throw when she is in danger.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't, you know?
Yeah.
And she throws hard, obviously. She put Joanna you know, she buckled Joanna a couple times.
She's dangerous. She's very, very tough.
She won against Rose.
Yeah.
You know, so, but yeah, I think styles make fights. And that's what happened with her in that situation. What do you think?
Andrade is unusually strong.
Yeah.
Like, freakish. Mm-hmm. You know, like you see when she grabs a hold of people and then dumps them on their ass. Like, yeah. She's freakishly powerful. Mm-hmm. To be able to, like, hit that single and elevate Rose that way and drop her on her head, mm-hmm. when you think about how strong you have to be to do that.
It's beautiful. Yeah. It's beautiful to watch.
She's a beast. Great technique as well. No, mm-hmm. no doubt about it. But, man, a lot of horsepower.
That's her bread and butter. And I gave it to Rose to win the fight. It only takes a split second, though, to lose your focus and to get picked up and slammed down like that, and then the fight's over. You know,
for the division, it's actually probably good because it's exciting because mm-hmm. it mixes things up a bit. You have Joanna, who is the dominant champion for so long. Rose comes along and beats her, and then Jessica dumps Rose in her head and beats her in a fight that she was losing. I mean, there's like, it's a hotbed of talent. It's really, it's that 115-pound women's division is amazing right now. Yeah. It really is.
Yeah. Yeah. And so that's what I'm wanting. That's exactly what I want. And in the meantime, we just get better.
Beautiful.
Know? We train and we get better. I feel like what's going to beat Andrade is, Rose was doing exactly what she was doing. I think that Rose actually kind of got a little bit complacent. And like she's even said it herself. It was a moment of laziness.
A lapse, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And, well, it's easy to say. I mean, it's so hard after the fact to try to figure out what went wrong and why it went wrong, what was going on in her head. But clearly it was not lacing up the legs when she was attacking the Kimura. She mm-hmm. was elevated and dumped.
And I'm sure for a lot of her camp, she was able to do that with her teammates and probably pop off good submissions, you know. But in the moment of a fight for a championship belt in your hometown – against a person that's bread and butter is a pile drive, you know?
Yeah.
It's just like stacks up against you, for sure.
Well, good luck trying to find someone as strong as her, outside of maybe Valentina, who she does train with. I mean, but Jessica Andrade is probably one of the strongest women in the 150-pound division. She's so damn strong. Mm-hmm. So good luck trying to find someone to replicate that in training.
And you don't train that.
You don't train that.
You don't train a pile driver.
Right.
Like, that's dangerous.
Yeah.
That's one of those things that you just, I don't know.
She does train Valentina, though, who's one of the strongest women at 125. Mm-hmm. Valentina's a tank. Mm-hmm. That's a very strong woman.
But her style is different, too. Yep. She's a counter fighter, and she picks and chooses when she wants to go, and if
super
she holds you down.
Super technical striker.
Yeah, like, her takedowns are not Andrade's takedowns.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So, I don't know. We'll see.
It is one of the things that's so exciting about the sport is that there are so many different ways to approach it. Mm-hmm. There's so many different ways. There's your way, karate style. There's Joanna's way, Muay Thai. You know, I mean, there's Jessica's way, bulldog, get a hold of you, take her down. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in a lot of ways, Joanna also showed how to beat Jessica Andrade.
Exactly.
You know, she showed how to beat
her. I feel the difference with Joanna and Rose is that Rose, because... This is just my opinion, because Rose has shown to have more variety in her toolbox. She's really good grappling and this and that. That I don't think she's not as hesitant to go to the ground. I feel like if the situation allowed it, she would go to the ground and even get a submission on Andrade. Whereas with Joanna, she knows what she has to do to win, and she'll be stubborn in that sense and do that for 5 minutes, for five rounds, consistently. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like with Rose, she'll take risks, and a lot of times it does work for her, you know, and sometimes it just doesn't.
Yeah, and that was just one of those times.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's interesting to see her talk about fighting in period, that she doesn't know if she has that in her anymore, just to be mean to a person, to hurt a person.
But
I thought that was really interesting.
I love how honest she is. But I also feel like a big part of her getting the belt was to know that she could, you know, to know that she could take down Ioana, the invincible, you know. And then she did that, and then it was like, all right, well, now I know that I can. And it's kind of like, well, I've already accomplished what I wanted to accomplish. I don't know, maybe that's just me thinking out loud of what maybe she might be going through, what might be going on in her mind, you know.
Let's say if you fought Andrade and you beat her and you become the champion, would that take a significant amount of motivation away from you, or would you have more motivation to defend it?
So we talk about this too, because that's been such a huge goal of mine, is to be the champ. And I want to say two fights ago, we started implementing visualizations of me being the champ and defending the belt and how that would look like, you know. And
this is with your psychologist?
With my sports psychologist. And yeah, so that makes the mountain higher. you know, it's like, it's not the end game once you get the belt. And Coach Jackson would say that all the time. It's easy to become the champ. It's harder to stay the champ.
You know? It certainly is. Well, listen, Michelle, you're very entertaining. I love watching you fight. I hope if you do get the chance to fight for the title, that I'll be there to call it. And thanks for doing this. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me.
Great for everybody to get a chance to get to know you.
Thank you.
Michelle Watterson, ladies and gentlemen. Bye, everybody.